We are now moving to one of three categories that we will study the rest of this semester. Chazal, Rishonim, Achronim. When I say Chazal, it stands for Chachameinu Zichronam Livracha. Usually we call them our sages. Don't call Rashi Chazal. Right? Rashi does not ever do what Chazal do. Let me explain by the end of today. Hopefully you understand the difference between these two. Okay? And we'll use just some perushim from things that you're familiar with in these week's Torah portions. Yes, a question.
In Chazal, are they the what's it called?
Gemaras, Tanoim, Amoroim, Midrashim, Targumim.
Gaonim and Sifronim also?
No. I'm skipping them because they don't have their material.
Yeah. I was just asking.
I don't have
Father.
I have some Gaonic material on Halacha that was just found in the Kairavidiza and other places. But I don't have Gaonic. I have one Gaonic commentary aside from Gaon. I don't have Shriva Gaon Alatora. Right? Rishonim start to write, and I hope this class already knows enough to answer what happened that all of a sudden, around the year 1000, Jews wake up and say, hey, let's start writing commentaries that have shot. What gave rise to that? Please tell me that you're listening.
The disputes
with Christians. Right? The Jews were forced into it. Why not in 700? Why all of a sudden in the 11th century? Because of the Christian theology that says that Jesus is supposed to return at every millennium. They derived that from Sukkot and Tanakh. But that 1000, 2000, these are the times where, you know, lucky for the Jews, our relationship with the Christians was a little different in the year 2000 than the year 1000. Otherwise, many of you who were born in 2000, right? Many of you would have. What? You were born before 2000.
Yeah.
Right, but many of us would be missing a Chas V'Shalom, a lot of relatives, if they treated us in 2000 or they treated us in 1000. They went on rampages against us. The rampages were against Islam too, I must say. Right? Okay, but they said, why not kill some helpless Jews while we're at it? Yes, question.
Did the printing press like have a big effect on how...
That's 500 years from now, right?
But did that have a big effect on producing...
We'll talk about that. We talk about rabbinic Bibles and the Kroos Gadolos and the introduction of mass commentaries in one text. That the printing press helps that. Right? Nothing like that exists in the year 1300. If you had one manuscript of Rashi. Okay, so by Chazal I mean Gemarot, Targumim, Midrashim, right? Let me give an example of how Rashi's Perush uses this. I think we had a debate here about approximately what percentage of Perush Rashi is nothing but a rehashing of these three. Did we say an educated guess here? You want to ask?
80%.
Anyone else, please? Come on, just talk to me.
52%.
100%.
This is something that you can check. I mean, you can see what Rashi says. Now, if you buy a scholarly Perush to Rashi, it always tells you where did Rashi get this. And there was one five-volume book. Everyone should have it. It's called L'Pshuto Shel Rashi by a man named Shmuel Gelbard. And he gives you the Rashi. He tells you where Rashi got this. And an explanation of how Rashi read that text. Changed it a little. Stood it. And who disagrees with Rashi on this. Right, where Rashi someplace else might himself say something else on this particular pasuk, who quotes one pasuk in another place. So that's an excellent work. And the correct answer is very close to you. Is about it's a milsa dava digluya. Just check. 99% of Rashi was said before Rashi. And you know what? He's very humble. He'll tell you when he's saying something original. He writes va'ani omer. And usually when that happens, you don't find what he says anywhere. Because it's his own personal approach. Got it? He'll choose. He'll say, Onkelos looks at the pasuk this way. This Gemara and Sota looks at the pasuk that way. Sometimes he'll say, I think neither of them are really capturing the essence of the pasuk. But then he'll say, I think that this is... He doesn't mean Chas V'Shalom that one of them is wrong. He just says, it's not capturing the essence of the words behind in front of me. Okay? I mean, let me give an example of how to navigate Rashi. And what I'm about to write to you was essentially the Ashkenazic way of reading the text for the time of Rashi. There was some pushback from someone like Rashbam, of what I'm about to tell you, right? But the Sfaradim at the time of Rashi considered this to be so childish, and they used those words. They felt themselves so aloof of the Ashkenazic approach, because the Ashkenazim were ready to jump to accepting midrashic solutions to biblical issues, right? That they felt so above. They didn't even open up a Rashi. Ibn Ezra, it seems, did not look at Rashi before writing his commentary. He was aware of what Rashi wrote. He writes things so often that Rashi says in the name of someone else, sometimes even a Karaite, right? Which is criminal, Gili. How could you? He didn't read Rashi's Perush. Christians knew at the time that you can't write a commentary to the Torah, to the five books of Moses, without reading Rashi first. The Christians read more Rashi than Ibn Ezra did. Sfaradim just felt that, I'll just give a function of this. For hundreds of years, manuscripts of Rashi had this word on the front page, which literally means, in Aramaic, the Parshan. This is the one. Parshan Dito. Right? This is the Parshan. And there are approximately 300 different Kisveyad to Rashi ala Torah. Not significantly different, but different enough that you have to use all 300 of them in order to determine what Rashi actually said. It's not unlike what Ezra did, if you recall, some weeks ago. Remember the Radak about Kriyaktiv? Remember all that? Not so unlike what Ezra did in order to determine, the Medrash says, the correct version of the Pesukim of the Tanakh. Right? Okay? So we find on the front page of about 100 of these Kisveyad manuscripts, right? The full manuscript today sells for $2 million. These are all in private collections, right? A single page of an original Rashi manuscript sometimes sells for $10,000. Right? It's not Rashi's handwriting. We don't have Rashi's handwriting. We have the full Mishnah Torah of the Rambam in his handwriting. We don't have Rashi's handwriting. The French were very efficient at destroying our works. We don't have a Rashi manuscript within 100 years of the year he died. Which is an amazing tragedy. Right, so how can we be sure that we have it? Because Rashi was so popular that everybody had him. He was popular in his lifetime. Ibn Ezra is Vincent van Gogh. Nobody knew him in his lifetime. I say nobody. Some say that at the very end of his life, he married the Kuzari's daughter, Rav Yehuda Levi's daughter, and he came to a bit of fame. But in his lifetime, he was largely unknown. Okay, Rashi was famous in his 20s already. So, how did he come to be known as Parshan Dat? So, we have also come to possess. We don't know who the author of this poem. It's a poem written by a Sephardi Jew. He makes that very clear throughout the poem about his opinion regarding the Ashkenazi commentaries. Right? That would be Rashi, or very early Balei HaTosfos, right? And he writes at the end, the whole poem. Every line ends with ta. Is that familiar with a liturgy of ours that ends, every line ends with the word ta? Does it connect to any holiday in your mind? Shavuos. It's called Agdamut. Agdamut mina na 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 ta na 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 ta na. Not sure on Shavuos? Yeah? Okay. It's a poem of about 100 lines. Every last word ends tough out. Right? The poem is written like Avdamus. It's clever, right? The last few lines of the poem says, it's written in Aramaic. V'cholhani perushe tsarfata. It's written like in Hebrew plus in Aramaic together. Ani zorek toch ashpata chutz mizu shal parshandata. He says, I have no use for any of these Ashkenazi commentaries. I throw them all in the garbage, except that one, referring to Rashi. Right? So Rashi came to be known in his commentary on some Hisfayah, this Parshan Data. Right? There's a 4-volume work, by the way, on Rashi, everything you ever need to know about Rashi. It has a concordance of Rashi's words that he uses in all his works. Got that? You remember? I remember a Gemara where Rashi said the word symphonia, and you go look it up and you see where it is. Right? So this work is called Heichal Rashi by Yitzchak Avineri. Someday you'll go back to this, and of course none of you are taking notes because we're not giving a test on this. Yitzchak Avineri writes, he calls for, don't ever refer to Rashi as by this, even though it was meant to be a compliment, a left-handed compliment, at least I'll read that one. He's the only one I'll read. Who is Parshan Data in Tanakh? It's a name of someone. It's one of Haman's 10 children.
Oh.
Right? Parshan Data should not refer to Rashi. It's Shem Sharon Yirka. He's a Rasha. He's in Hamalek. And we're calling Rashi's parish. Right? Why? Because this is Shalom, who writes a poem, refers to Rashi as Parshan Data. Right? Anyway, Adkan. So Rashi is 99% just a rehashing of one of these three. Okay. He does not always agree with these three. Right? He usually does, but he will disagree, he will bring it down, or he won't record a Gemara in Sota that explains a particular fact of the Torah, because he doesn't think that it captures the essence of the words. Rashi, in his very first Perush al HaTorah, tries to establish that the Torah is not written in a simple Hebrew. It's written in a very complicated Hebrew, in an extraneous Hebrew. It uses words it shouldn't be using. It spells words it shouldn't be spelled this way. We learned that with Yeshayim Lemesora, right? Rashi is very sensitive to Yeshayim Lemesora. Right? We discussed last class why he says that it wasn't 318 men, but it was actually Eliezer alone who went with Abraham, right? Okay, none of you remember from one class to another, right? Okay. So, says last week's parsha, Avram took 318 men to Madin Lot. And it says, Vayorek et Chanichov. But it misses the yud here. Vayorek et Chanichov. Right? Okay? He gathered or enthused up to his chanichav, means his disciples, from the word chinuch, right? But chanichav, if you're not prepared with the laning, looks like chanicho, yeah. Singular, right? So Rashi says it wasn't 318 men, it was Eliezer, the only person we know who Avram, by name at that point, right? What an amazing coincidence that the number of people that Avram took is that guy's gematria, or his name. Isn't that amazing? But now, there are about 300 known commentaries to Rashi, whose whole job is to do what this guy does. Give Rashi's source, explain what he says, defend him from those who disagree with what he says. This was excoriated by the Sfarda commentaries. Tell me why. They blasted him. What are you putting this? You're writing for little babies. This is not what little Midrash says. This is a commentary to the Torah that you claim is pshat. Ibn Ezra's not against Midrashim. Ibn Ezra says often the main way for the Jew to read the biblical text is from the standpoint of these three sources of Chazal. It's just that you, Rashi, you wrote a commentary that you claim is pshat. Right? Shuddo Shomikra is the simple meaning, is the straightaway meaning. What are you giving me a drash here that 318 doesn't mean 318? That's not pshat. Pshat is 318 means 318. Thank you. Okay? So it could be that what's drawing Rashi is Yeshayim Lemesora. I don't like spelling mistakes. I'm trying to explain why the yud is missing there. Could be. could be this amazing coincidence, but I think that it's something more than that. Can anyone tell me what shot is driving Rashi to say that 318 here just means Eliezer? Try to figure it out. Because Ibn Ezra on this pasuk, without mentioning Rashi, he says, whoever says that this is Eliezer is writing for kids who are still nursing to keep them interested in the Torah, and the Torah does not speak the gematria, because if you think that gematria is a pshat of the way the Torah speaks, then you can do whatever you want if you have enough time to waste. Thank you, the Bible codes. Right? By the way, Ibn Ezra is wrong. The Torah does speak the gematria. Right? What does gematria actually mean? It doesn't mean aleph is one, bays is... That's one of 100 types of gematria. Be amazed, in all of Chazal, there's one commentary called the Rokeach, who lists 63 types of gematrias. Gematria is a code. When you don't want to say A, instead you say B. But B really means A. It's a euphemism, it's a code. You hide codes. When I don't want the Babylonians to know I'm talking about them, says Yirmiyahu, I call them Sheshach. Yirmiyahu talks at the end of his book about a nation called Sheshach. I've never heard of that nation. Who is it? What does that look like? You could tell in a second if you're good at codes. Alright? Okay? Alright? He does this often in his book, where he refers to something that's incomprehensible. I don't know what this is. I never heard of this place. And if you're good at decoding things, and it's not even so clever, it's so simple. But the Babylonians, here Sheshach, okay, he's not talking about us. Right? So once I see a prophet referring to Bavel as Sheshach, then the Torah does speak with gematria. By the way, Ibn Ezra, three times in his commentary, explains does gematria. So he talks the talk here against Rashi, right here. But three places, in Zechariah, Sheyahu, and Rus, he gives a gematria. So that's an interesting thing in itself. Another time. Tell me now, come on, talk to me. It says, Abraham gathered his disciples, and 318 of them went to save Lot. Of course it's not just Eliezer. How could just Abraham and Eliezer conquer four kings who are wiping out the whole world? Of course, if you want to answer that question, the Gemara in the Masechet Tanya says, he had magic dust. Threw up into the air, and that just made all of them wither away and die. Maybe it was some kind of mushroom cloud, if you know what I mean. Right? So it just made them all fall asleep. Okay, no, maybe he had something there. He had something he put in there. He put a little Mickey in their drinks, and then they do. They went to just two men to cover the whole thing. Maybe, could be. All right. But that's, don't you understand that the Gemara has to say something like that? Because how could two men, really, how could Rashi, you're an adult, and you're writing for you're not writing for five-year-olds. How are you going to do? So then, my question I pose to you again. Why does Rashi write it in his commentary? Why the Medrash writes it is enough said. The Medrash doesn't like misspelled words, and the Medrash is an amazing coincidence of year 18. Why does Rashi put this in his commentary? Talk to me. No, based on the number. Because there's no other place in Kol HaTorah Kula you have a number like this.
318?
Yeah, what should the Torah usually write if it's actually 318 men that went with him? 300. Come on, I have long lists in the Torah of the amount of tribes. They all end with 00. Mostly end with 000. Some end with 500. You think every tribe ended with 500? 47,500? 54,000?
Rounded up.
The Torah rounds off everything. The Rosh, at the end of Pesachim, says the Torah even rounded off the 7 weeks between Pesach and Shavuos. It calls it 50 days in Vayikra. The Torah rounds off the 69 people who went to Yaakov, and it calls them 70. You don't have to look for drushes of how the number 69 became 70. And the Torah rounds off the amount of makos you get. It calls it 40 when it's really 39.
Yes, but the Torah doesn't round off starts age.
You see, an age An age, I don't know if an age has to... You're right, there's something extraordinary about Sora's age that made Rashi darshan there too. 100, like 20, 20, like 7. But ages are not round off. No, age is not round off. Moshe really was 120. Yosef really was 110. Because they're... Just because someone gives me an age of 137 for Kahas doesn't mean that, well, the one time I see a number like this, that there's something extraordinary going on here, Rashi says. Why did the Torah give me 318? There's no other number of people in the whole Torah like this.
They round off and they not count the Jews.
I'm sorry?
When they count the Jews, they round off.
Throughout Sefer Bamidbar, of course. I just said that. All the numbers end 000. That's rounded off. All of them. Okay, so that's Rashi says, that medrash is getting in. Okay, you got it? Okay, so that's Rashi's job, is to say what in Chazal gets into my page. So I'm going to write on the board five items that is the agenda of the midrashim, and then we're going to study next week how Rashi uses these five items. One is textual inconsistencies, right? In other words, what I'm writing is based on a problem of the text. Why did you use this word and not that word? But in order to work with this, you have to be—you have to obviously know Hebrew, right? You have to obviously know grammar, right? Got it? Okay, when Rashi writes something that appears to be incomprehensible, you've got to know, what he's working with, all right? Something that looks to Rashi like a textual inconsistency, you might not catch. You don't know why Rashi said that's why you need this book. Okay. Let's use an example. Yaakov blesses Yosef with these three words. Birchos Shodayim Vorechem. On the face of it, first we have to translate the words, a blessing of the breasts and the womb. It is a blessing of fertility. Your tribe will have greater numbers than all the other tribes, and it's absolutely true. First of all, Yosef is Ephraim plus Menashe. Together they were twice the size of most other Shvatim. Ephraim itself, and when they got to Israel, they said, the land, they told Yeshua, the land you gave us is not enough for all the people. And Menashe has land on both sides of the Yarden. Ephraim and Menashe had huge tracts of land, and that wasn't even enough for them. So Yaakov's bracha comes true to them, right? But it's a simple enough blessing, right? This does not need drash. Rashi says that this word is Aramaic. Doesn't mean breasts. It means a blessing that men will be fertile. Because he says it's an Aramaic word. Men will be fertile. Shadi in Aramaic means to shoot. Men will be endowed with the ability to shoot healthy zera into the womb of a woman, and she will become pregnant and populate Yosef with many people. That's how Rashi explains these two words. Rashi, come on. I mean, what's forcing you to say that this word is not its pshat?
Because it's never used in it.
Shadayim is a common word in the Torah and throughout Tanakh.
Okay.
Alright? So what's pulling Rashi here? So this is how you have to get to know Rashi. Right? Rashi writes in his commentary, "Ani lo bati ela lepshuto shamikra." My purpose is to give you pshat la'agodah hamiyashevet divrei mikra. In other words, my preference is always pshat. I always approach a pasuk to try to give pshat first. That's what he wrote first, right? If that doesn't work, I'm going to give you an agodah that will appease, it will settle an unsettled text. It's a text that needs settling. In other words, get it? It's inconsistent. It's a problematic text. It's not what we expect. I expect males, male to stay male, female to stay female. We did that with Rus, Perek Aleph, right? Did we do that with men dressed up as women, women dressed up as men, remember? So when I see male pronouns used to describe women, I have to darshan. Why do you do that? Or correct it. Why does for 2,000 years all Megillat Rus continues to give us the misconception that these are men traveling from Moab to the Gaon HaYarden to back to Beis Lechem? Why are you using male pronouns? It's obviously wrong. Hebrew differentiates between men and women. Why are you using singular verbs to describe a plural subject so many times? We don't correct them. We work with them. Right? You got it? Now, there are different ways to work with them. Right? When I have a pasuk, Vayikach, Shem, Vayefet, et asimlo. Shem and Yefet, Vayikach, took the blanket to cover the naked father. It should say Vayikhu. Right? Correct it. No, we're going to keep that in Sora. We're going to darshan it. Either they acted together as one, or, in this case, Rashi says, only Shem took it, Yefet just came along to help him carry it. Yefet said, what do we have to do this? Let Daddy just get out of his drunkenness. No, come with me, I can't do this myself. Come on. Why does Rashi say that? Because he likes Shem more. He's descended from Shem. No, because when Noah awakens from his drunkenness, he blesses the daylights out of Shem, and Yefet is just dragged along. Because he somehow learned what had happened there. Right? So we don't say textual inconsistency. Okay, let's take a cut and paste and take the scissors and cut out and make all the changes. No, we don't do that. That's what the third grade teacher might do on a chibur, on a composition. But the Torah has maintained its mesorah, and we stick to it as it is. Right? So does anybody have a thought here to explain why Rashi says this? Why does Rashi say Shodaya Berecha means men and women will be fertile in Yosef? By the way, that's a big chiddush at that time in history. It's a chiddush even in Rashi's time, but it's certainly a chiddush in ancient times, that a couple could be lacking children and it could be the man's fault. But that's a pasuk in the Torah. It says, Lo yevacha akar va'akara. You will not have an akar and an akara. Right? Look, they knew if a man doesn't shoot any zera at all, which is not uncommon, but I'm sure they had it, if he doesn't shoot any zera at all, that they're not going to ever conceive. Right? Okay, but that there could be zera, but it's just not healthy, and it's not swimming properly, and it's not getting up to where it has to get. So what's forcing Rashi? Any thoughts here in this room? Yes?
Maybe because shudim is the word following after birkat, so it's the blessing is only on the word shudim. So he thought maybe that can be only to men.
Really? Birkat shudayim v'rechem means this and that. And what good is a fertile man if the woman's rechem can't accept it and create a child? Come on, think of that. Alright, so you see, Rashi has the whole Tanakh. I think this is true. Rashi has the whole Tanakh in his head when he's writing his commentary. But I go through Tanakh twice a year. Right? Once from Simchas Torah to Erev Pesach, and one from Pesach to Simchas Torah. Right? And every year it's a different book. Every 6 months. Right? Right now I'm starting Shmuel Bet today. Finish Yoshua and Shoftim, Shmuel Aleph, since Simchas Torah. Everything, a different commentary, it's busy. Doing this while I'm on treadmill. Alright, staying healthy. Alright? And I'm constantly seeing new. Oh my goodness! I can't believe it. It says this about Shalom, it says the same words about David. Let's compare this. So Rashi is doing this all the time. Rashi probably went through Tanakh 12 times a year. Right? And he has the whole Tanakh in his head. This is before concordances, before the internet. And Rashi knows that these two words appear together in the same pasuk four other times. And all those times, and now I started you off, yeah?
They mean men and women. The shadim means men?
No.
No.
All the times, and you know what? Shadim means breasts here too in pshat. But Rashi saw something wrong in this pasuk. Even the Art Scrolls translation, which says in its introduction, we like to translate the pasuk like Rashi. But then he translates breasts and wombs. Come on, the other four times, if, when this refers to fertility, but one of them refers to infertility, where God says, I will ruin your wombs and I'll dry up your breasts that your children will die. Terrible, terrible prophecy of Hosea, right? But I just gave it away. In all those other psukim, the word rechem comes first in the pasuk and then shadayim. First the woman's having the baby, then she's nursing it. So why in this pasuk? This is a mikrash tzarech yishu. You get it? To Rashi, you didn't see it because you don't read the pasuk critically. Right? You probably read Hamlet more critically than you read the pasuk in the Torah. Right? But that's what Gelbar is for. Right? He'll tell you that in a second. Okay? So when it says Birchos Shadayim Berechem, Rashi's antenna goes up and says, oh, there's something wrong here. Inconsistent text. Right? Why is Shadayim before Rechem? So this, look at the brilliance of this. Rashi says, oh my goodness, what a coincidence. Shadayim in Aramaic means to shoot. It's actually the Targum Onkelos, to shoot, wherever the Torah uses the word shoot. Shoot an arrow or something, it's the Targum Onkelos, Shadayim. Shatadayim or something like that. In the Gemara, Shadi means to throw something. Right? So Rashi understands this to be, this is a Mikrash Tzarech Yishuv. Why is the order switched from all the other times when these two words appear together? And it makes sense. If you want to bless Yosef with fertility, first bless the women to have the baby, and then bless them to nurse them. Right? If Shadayim means breasts. But if it doesn't, because the order is out of order, I'm going to give the same blessing of fertility in the right order. Man's initiating something, he's doing something first. Right? Then the woman is receiving the zera, and Baruch Hashem, with God's blessings, this came true to Yosef. Right? You see what Rashi's working with now? You can't just be the Rashi's, okay, Professor Daba, the Imam, father and mother will be fertile. Let's go on to the next puzzle. You got to see how they're reading the text. Right? That's the first thing. Two, this is called Milui Pa'arim. This is a terminology that appears in the Sefer called Darkei HaAgadah, The Ways of the Agadah, by a man named Yitzchak Heinemann. Milui Pa'arim is filling in the gaps. You have any curiosities of certain things in the Torah? The Torah doesn't tell you a scintilla. What was Avram's youth like? That's probably the best example of Milui Pa'arim Midrashim. What was Avraham's youth like? Why did God choose him? I know why God chose Noah. He's starting to come in. I know why God chose Moshe. I have some stories about him. Right? I know why God chose David. I know, in fact, everyone was chosen. I can look in the text and see why God chose them. Except Avraham. Avraham doesn't seem to be chosen for anything here he did, but for something he has the potential to do. Okay, maybe that's it. All right? But when I look in the Agadah, I look at Gemara's Targumim and Midrashim. When I say Targumim, amazing. This past week's Haftorah, to Targum Yonason, you know, Onkelos is to the Torah, Yonason is to Nevi'im, no Ksuvim, you remember this from some time back? Right? You remember it for the little exam I'm going to be giving you on it later in the semester. Little quiz. The Targum Yonason to last week's Haftorah has a whole big description of Avram's youth. What drove God to choose him. Right? So there are traditions about what Avram's youth was like. You got it? Okay. There are midrashim that fill in gaps of information. What did Cain and Hevel talk about when the two of them were struggling, right? It says, V'yomer Cain al Hevel ochiv. Cain said to help his brother, when they were in the field, Cain got up and killed his brother. Right? What did he say? There are midrashim that are very eagerly willing to tell you what was said there. Does that mean that rabbi says, I was there with Cain and Hevel, I heard him say this? No, there's usually a deeper meaning to that. You ever hear of the three opinions of what they fought about?
Come on, talk to me.
What did you fight about?
It thought about. It thought about who gets to offer their thing first, the Korban first.
That was like nice.
It's behind them. I know that, but what did they fight it? What did they talk about this?
What?
Who get right? The first thing is who gets the movables, who gets the land. So if you would appear that Cain says, "I get the land, you get the movables," right? You're working with things that move around. I'm working the ground. So okay, that's how they decided to. And one day, when Cain got jealous of him, he says, "Hevel, you should live in a tree. You're walking on my ground." And Hevel turned to him and he says, "Wait a second, you're wearing clothes from my sheep, from the wool." So they got into a fight over that, and in that fight, Cain killed Hevel. What else?
A woman.
Right? Rashi brings this one down, actually. What made Rashi record this one as pshat? Because when Cain was born, it says, "Va'yok va'teled es Cain." When Hevel is born, it says, "Va'teled es ochiv es Hevel." Why say it that way? A child you give birth to, number two, of course is the brother of your child, number one. Right? There's no one else around. So why does the Torah have to say "Vateled es ochiv es hevel"? So Rashi, and I don't know why, I wouldn't have put this into a perush, I think is pshat. But Rashi wants to deal with these S's. Right? So Rashi says this S means Cain was born with a twin sister, and Hevel was born with two twin sisters. To explain, I mean, Cain has children already before there's a third child born. Right? So Rashi says that there were lots of people. Okay. Anyway, that's Rashi's theory. Right? They were arguing over that extra sister. Cain said, "I deserve her because I'm older." Hevel says, "I deserve her. She was born with me." Right? Next. Anyone know the third thing they fought over? Vayhi b'yotam ba'sadeh. They're in the sadeh. In the pasuk in Micha, the base of Mikdash is called Sodet. Tzion Sodet Techaresh. So the third opinion is which half of the land. This opinion says they shared the movables and the earth. But which half? One took above the equator, one took below the equator. And he said, this one said, "I want the base of Mikdash built in my half of the world." This one said, "I want the base of Mikdash to be built in my half of the world." Who's talking the base of Mikdash? Well, they are bringing Korbanos. Right? But what do you think the deeper message of this Midi Parim is? This is going to be number five. I'll get you to three and four in a second. Is the homily. Always get this out of your medrash. Your medrash has a purpose to it. Every war ever fought from this day on, every altercation, every fight, every time one nation picks up arms against another, it's going to be for one of these three reasons, nothing else. It will always fall into one of these three reasons. Everything may loosely fall into one of these three, right? But everything will be because of your competitive spirit about one of these three things. Religion, Beis HaMikdash, the love of a person, it could be Alexander the Great, apparently fought a battle over a love interest. A man in India, right? And that was his undoing. Okay? So that's what some historians say. I don't know. Whatever. But I'm just saying is that that's two. Number three is power, objects, land, control, right? All right. So that's the homily, the deeper message. The milui pa'arim does not mean to tell you that this is exactly what happened, right? It's not a lie. I can't say the word here on the moral tape. It's cow chips. Alright? The rabbis are not saying that I was there and this is exactly what happened. No, even when Rashi records it, I'm not sure. That I would say the debate is out on this. I'll give an example from next week's parasha on this, is that Abraham's servant makes a deal with God about how to determine who his master's son should marry. Those of you who are listening, you all know what I'm talking about? Right? Okay? So, when he gets to the place where they're drawing water, it says, V'chol b'nos ha'aretz, shoavos mayim. You have a picture of what that is? drop a pail into a well. There's something weighted in it so that it dips into the water. Otherwise, it's going to stave on the water. You're not going to get any water. It dips into the water. You fill up the pail. It breaks the plane. It starts to fill up. And then you... That act is called Lishov Mayim. You are with me? Okay? He gets to the place where all the daughters of the land are Shovos Mayim. And it says, Vayorots. He ran right up to Rivka and said, do you have some water for a thirsty stranger? First one for one. She said, yeah, I have for you and for your camels. Beautiful story. Rashi asks, why did he run to her? What did he see in her that made him not give any of the other girls in that whole area there a chance at history? I mean, your deal was, well, the first girl, what is he running to that one for? So it's a legitimate question. It should have just said, who has water for a thirsty stranger? It might sound a little awkward, but okay. Let a couple of girls line up, and the first one that includes his camels, which I assure you is not a simple thing for a left or a long trip. The camels go 2 weeks without drinking, and then when they finally drink, you know what a camel can do. Right? So why did he write Yoruts straight to this one? So this Rutman, anyone remember what Rashi writes?
Then he like saw the face of God on the phone.
He saw what?
The face of God on the phone, like a light.
Rivka, you mean?
Yeah.
I would actually prefer that Perush to what Rashi actually writes. In other words, how do you know this? By the way, this is a good example of what I said at the beginning of class. Rashi would never say that on his own, unless, finish my sentence please. It was already in Chazal. That's for these guys to do. Right? When Rashi, what Ramban sometimes does is, Yitochein, maybe that, I'm writing a Haggadah now, I don't think it's going to come out in time for this Pesach, but I write that in my Perush, in my Haggadah. It could be, and I have an editor who's very harsh with me. He says, you can't say Yitochein on these kind of things, you have to show who said it. Right, and I argue in some cases I don't mind saying it's okay to say perhaps this is what happened to explain this, and I go along with that. I prefer what you say than what Rashi actually says. It's just that what you say doesn't appear in a Medrash. Anyone, what does Rashi actually say?
Is there like a miracle happened?
Yes, a miracle happened. He saw the water rise out of the well right into her pail. And he saw that from far, right? She didn't know someone was watching. He ran over, I gotta find out more about this girl, right? So what did you even need to test her? She's Melumedes Benisim, right? According to Rashi. The question is, why does Rashi write such a thing? To explain why he ran to her? I think that's circular reasoning. I think there's a better reason why it says this. And by the way, Rashi says this about three biblical characters. Moshe, in the beginning of Shmos, Yaakov and Parshas Vayetze, and Rivka here. All three of them, Rashi says, were able to get water to rise out of a pail, out of a well into their pail. Rashi, come on. Maybe you are writing for five-year-olds. Why would you say such a thing? You're writing a shot. Why that appears in the Medrash, I get. The Medrash can really say whatever it wants. Because it knows that the reader knows its cow chips. All right? Okay, and it's meant to be, right? Okay, not a lie, all right? Okay, you all know what word I'm avoiding here, right? All right, so here is what these guys do. This is what the value of this page. In all three of those places, where Moshe gets water for the daughters of Israel, where Yaakov gets water for Rachel, and where Rivka gets water for... By the way, isn't this a fascinating thing? All three, these are the only three times in the whole Bible, not just the Torah, where we're told about how people met in order to get married. Let's look at Rivka, Rachel and Yaakov, Moshe and Zipporah. All three are the well where someone does a chesed to someone else to get them water. It's a beautiful idea. Alright? Get to that another time. In all three stories, there's a background pasuk that says people are shoavot mayim. And when these three get their water, all it says is, vatimalei et kador. He filled the pail. yet she didn't have to shin Aleph Bet like all the other girls.
Why doesn't the Torah say that she sha'avd? That's why Rashi says he ran to her. Get it? Well, that's... I'm sorry. No. I correct that. That's why Rashi says that the water rose into a pail. He didn't run to her. Rashi doesn't write he ran to her because he saw the... Rashi says he ran to her because I saw the water rise. Rashi writes, I saw the water rise because of this missing shot. Okay? I would say it's circular reasoning to say that Rashi wrote that the water rose out of the well into a pail because he ran to her. That is circular reasoning. And if anyone gets that, it's a little complicated. The reason why Rashi says the water rose out of the pail is because of the textual point of no sha'av by all three of these, when in the background of them, it says that others are sha'aving. You get it? The others have to sha'av. These three don't. Why? Now you get to the drashic answer. What I would love to have here in this room is Rashi to ask him, Rashi, very nice, it's good in your parish, but I want to sit you down and ask you, how many people really did go with Avraham to save Lot? Do you really believe that the water rose out of the pail? Because, you know, the way the Sephardim read biblical text, even if it had said in the Pasuk that the water rose out of the well into the pail, they would read figuratively and say that it means that he saw in her a miraculous nature of how wonderfully she seems to me to be groomed for Yitzchak. Like you go on a date and you have your five things that you're really looking for and someone, and she's all five of these. It's a miracle. Right? Okay? So I don't know. If I had Rashi here, I think I would ask him also, do you really think that Rivka was three at this time? Which is what Rashi also says. Three? So my personal position on this is that Rashi's job is not to tell you what happened. His job is to explain the words in front of him in the Torah. I can prove to you, at least in the case of Abraham's servant, that later in the parasha, when Abraham tells the king of Sodom all that I want from you, he says, I want X, Y, and Z, and the food that all the men I took with me to save Lot, give them food. Rashi. He should have said, and Rashi records that. Right, who are these people? He should have just said, just a meal for Eliezer. Doesn't say that. So then what do you mean by, what is your parish like? It could be that Rashi meant that the 318 men fought as if, like, such a unit, such a cohesion, as if though they're just two people, one here and one there. And it does say, Vayechalik Aleihem Laila. The Gemara says that Abram put half the men in here, here, and they fought like two units, Avram and Eliezer, leading groups. Rashi says Rivka was three indeed. He does say it a few times in his parish. But Rashi also, at the end of the story, when it says, let's ask her if she wants to go. Remember that? Next week's parasha? Let's ask her herself if she wants to go with this guy who just came and asked her for water at the well. So on that pasuk, Rashi writes, a girl should never get married until she indicates that she is interested. Right? And he quotes the Gemara Yevamos that says this. Excuse me, the Gemara says that that's only the case if she's past the bogeris. You only have to ask the 17-year-old, 20-year-old. You don't have to ask a 3-year-old, a 10-year-old, an 11-year-old, even a 12-year-old who you want to marry. All right? So that proves that Rashi thinks she's not three. Rashbam, his grandson, proves that she's closer to 20 based on other sources in the Gemara. So that leaves us a little confused about what Rashi does, but not so much, because Rashi's job, even though it contradicts sometimes, because the Torah sometimes has contradictory details about things.
All right? So Rashi's job is to explain the words in front of him, like he says here, until what I write is a davor dahur alofnov. It's not a third way to read the Torah. It just means until what I wrote is, it looks like it captures the essence of the words in the Torah. Right? So this is, these are the three, so right now, three approaches to Agadah and Rashi's input. Next class, we're going to do number 3 and 4, all right? Which will, and they'll close out our discussion of Midrashei Agadah.
Thank you.